Good morning to each one of you this morning. I want to welcome each one of you to our worship service this morning. Special welcome to the visitors. I trust that you'll be blessed, as I have been already this morning, as we look further into the scriptures. The themes of the message this morning have been running all through the service thus far, from the devotional to the Sunday school lesson to Brother Leon's devotions. Appreciated a lot of the thoughts that were brought out there. There's an insect in Scripture that is mentioned twice. Once in the singular, once in the plural. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer, and gathereth her food in the harvest. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 24. There be four things which are little upon the earth, but they are exceeding wise. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer. Well, the first verse would indicate that we can find wisdom by studying the ant. Can you and I receive instruction and wisdom from a little ant? An insect that we tread upon and destroy with hardly a second's thought, most of the time totally unaware, occasionally deliberately. Is there something we can learn from this? Well, Proverbs says there is. Consider her ways and be wise. Trust, I believe we all want to be wise this morning. So let's take a look at the ant. This is an introduction. This is not the main message, but some thoughts and interesting facts about ants. As the scripture already mentions, they plan ahead. Summertime, they're gathering and storing up food for the winter. Pretty basic understanding, basic thought. How often have you seen a lazy ant sitting under the shade tree? Oh, wait. Shade leaf, maybe. Taking a break, taking it easy, watching what's happening around them. Ants can lift 10 to 50 times their own weight. And one ant, the Asian weaver ant, can lift 100 times its own weight. So let's take that formula to a person. A 150-pound person then, in the case of the Asian weaver ant, should be able to lift 15,000 pounds. Okay. They do tremendous. The one source I read said, I think that of all the creatures and organisms that God has created, considering its size, the ant is the strongest of them all. What happens when an ant tries to move something that's too big? You ever watch that? Flip a rock over, see ants going everywhere, and sit there and just study them for a while. Watch an ant trying to move something that's too big. What happens? To give up, walk away, run away. Well, soon there's one, two, three, four, and there's a whole cluster of them running to its aid until the object is moved and transported to where it needs to go. So they help each other. A scout ant will leave the colony in search of new food sources. When it finds a food source, it takes a direct route back to the colony, and along the way it drops little scents. So that the stream of foraging ants coming out of the colony knows right where to go to find that food source. And they will continue going there until it's depleted and that food source is gone. Meanwhile, other scouting ants are out looking for other food sources, and the same process continues to repeat itself. Ants have two stomachs. This I did not know before. One stomach holds food for themselves, and the other one holds food that they share with others, with other ants. Interesting. Ant colonies can be quite large. There was a group of scientists that excavated an ant colony. This is not one you would find around here, but if you see pictures of them, I'm guessing it was South America or some place like that where you see these large mounds, ant mounds. They excavated this colony. The way they actually did it was dumped concrete down in the hole. I think it was 10 tons of concrete it took until the hole was finally filled up. And then excavated it. It covered an area of 500 square feet. It was about 24 feet deep. It was estimated that 40 tons of dirt was moved by these ants in the construction of this colony. Huge network of tunnels and rooms, and it's quite interesting. So what can we learn from the ants? Well, they all work together for the good of the colony. And that's the emphasis of the message this morning. The title of the message is Bearing the Burden of Brotherhood. Bearing the Burden of Brotherhood. And we all know what a burden is, right? You ever carried a burden? It's something, when we think of that word, I'll tell you my picture I get, and that is the book Pilgrim's Progress and Christian as he struggled on his journey carrying this huge, immense pack over his back. It's something heavy and it's unpleasant, it's hard to carry, and we just want to get rid of it. More on that later. What do we mean by brotherhood? Another phrase that we use from time to time. One definition that I came across is a fellowship, an alliance, a feeling of friendship and understanding between one another. My definition, it's a group of people dedicated to each other and committed to a cause that by themselves they are unable to fully carry out. So is brotherhood a burden? Perhaps you're thinking that's strange. I thought brotherhood was a good thing, and now you're asking if it's a burden, or you're calling it a burden. So is brotherhood a burden? I'm not going to answer the question. I trust until the end of the message, hopefully you're able to answer it yourself, although I do plan to pick up the question at the end of the message again and try to answer that. So is brotherhood a burden? Should it be a burden? Is there something wrong if it is? Is there something wrong if it isn't? Why and how might it be a burden? Can I ever get rid of this burden? You know, when Christian in Pilgrim's Progress got to the cross and the burden rolled off his back, well, he felt delivered. He felt free. Do we ever get to unload this burden, if it is that? I want to look mostly at this in the narrow sense, thinking of it right here inside the Leola congregation, although it would be good to look at it and consider it on a broader sense too, and I'll maybe let you make those applications as we go along. Brotherhood, although it uses the term brother in it, involves everyone. It's not exclusive to this side of the house. It's all of us. I'll make that clear as well as we go on. All right, turn with me to Nehemiah chapter 1. We'd like to take a look at the story of Nehemiah and the building, the rebuilding of Jerusalem and the people as a basis for the message. Nehemiah chapter 1. I don't plan to. The scope is going to cover the first four chapters, basically, of Nehemiah, and I would love to take the time to read it, but we won't do that, so we're going to sort of jump through this mostly in a chronological fashion, pick out some truths here from this account. Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 2, this is Nehemiah telling his story. That Hanani, one of my brethren came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And I'm going to stop reading right there. Why did Nehemiah ask this question? Why did he ask this question? Well, he cared. I think it's pretty plain and simple. He cared of the situation of his fellow Jews. He was concerned about that. He had an interest in what was happening. So he asked, what's happening there? What's happening back in Jerusalem? How interested are you in what your brothers and sisters, how they're faring? The ones sitting on either side of you, how interested are you in how they're doing? Take that a little bit broader. For this instance, I'm going to take it outside these walls. But what about other church groups? Do you hurt when they hurt? Do you spend time in prayer for them? Do you rejoice when they are growing and prospering? Or do we sometimes enjoy hearing their struggles? It's something that has concerned me over the years. I remember a brother telling me this story. This happened quite a few years ago. It was in a committee meeting in our circles. Don't remember what the issue of this problem was that was being discussed. A solution was proposed, and it sounded like a good one, and everyone was mostly on board until one person spoke up and said, "Hey, that's the way Eastern does it. We can't do it that way." That was the end of that. Are we going to let that determine what we do? Well, verse 3. "They said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burnt with fire." What good is a city without walls and without gates? Now, we don't think about that so much in our times because we're not threatened. Our world is much different than it was back then, but a city without gates and without a wall is defenseless. It has nothing left. They are ripe for the picking. So is a church brotherhood without rules. Those rules, those walls are there for our protection. They're there for my protection. And for a lot of years of my life, I didn't appreciate that. But they are there for protection. A city without defenses is defenseless. So is a brotherhood that's not on a scriptural foundation. It's also defenseless. More on that later. Well, what's Nehemiah's response to this? He asks the question. He gets a very unpleasant answer. I'm sure he wasn't hoping to hear an answer like that. "And it came to pass," verse 4, "when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And I said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. Let thine ear now be attentive, and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now, day and night, for the children of Israel, thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. Both I and my father's house have sinned. We have dealt very corruptly against thee, and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments which thou commandest thy servant Moses. Remember, I beseech thee, the word that thou commandest thy servant Moses, saying, If ye transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations. But if ye turn unto me and keep my commandments and do them, though there were of you cast out into the uttermost part of heaven, yet will I gather them from thence, or bring them unto the place that I have chosen to set my name there. Now these are thy servants and thy people, whom thou hast redeemed by thy great power and by thy strong hand. O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, and to the prayer of thy servants, who desire to fear thy name, and prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer." So, Nehemiah weeps and fasts and prays and mourns. And then he went on living just like he did before. What would this story, this account read if that would have been his attitude? But Nehemiah voluntarily picked up this burden of his people. You know, he could have stayed in this safe place. He was safe here. As long as he carried out his responsibilities, did his work, he was safe here. Why should he put his life in danger? Why should he jump outside his or step outside his comfort zone? Why should he take responsibility for this? He had a job to do serving the king. Yet, he cared enough to do just that. And because of that, we have this account here that we can look into and learn from and understand. He put the good of his people over himself. What's one of the most necessary ingredients to do this is simple love. 1 Corinthians 13:13, and now abideth faith. Oh, faith is tremendously important, isn't it? And what we're doing? Hope. That's what keeps us motivated. Charity, these three, but what is the greatest? But the greatest of these is charity. Mark chapter 12, verse 30. Turn to that if you wish. This is one of the scribes that came and asked Jesus, which is the first commandment of all? And Jesus answered him, verse 29, the first of all the commandments is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like, namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none other commandment greater than these. And the scribe said unto him, well, Master, thou hast said the truth, for there is one God, and there is none other but he. And to love him with all the heart, and with all the understanding, with all the soul, and with all the strength, and to love his neighbor as himself is more than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices. And when Jesus saw that he had answered discreetly, he said unto him, thou art not far from the kingdom of God. Jesus' response there is quite interesting, and I pondered over that for a bit as I considered that. Did this man have a heart change, or was it a head knowledge and a head understanding? And I think that's the difference. Sometimes the head understanding needs to come ahead of or along with the heart change, but this man had not quite experienced a heart change yet, and so Jesus responded this way, thou art not far from the kingdom of God. So love is incredibly important. The second greatest commandment other than loving God is to love your fellow man, to love your neighbor. Back to Nehemiah. You know, no one can force you to have a burden for the brotherhood here at Loyola or elsewhere. No one can force you to do that. I can't force you to do that. Young people, your parents can't force you to do that. That's a voluntary choice that you have to make, or you can just choose not to make it. You can choose to live your life as you wish. No one can force you to do it. You can choose to be a fence rider. You can ride the fence. You can be careless about our standards. You can totally disregard them if you choose. But what is that? But what are you doing? Are those actions building up the walls and the gates? Are they building up their brotherhood, or are they tearing it down? What are you doing? Which of these two is your story? There's no middle ground, I don't believe, as I thought about this. What you and I do is either building up or tearing down. I don't think there's really any middle ground. No matter what your intentions are, maybe you don't see it as all that important. Doesn't matter. Your actions and what you do and choose to do or choose not to do is either building up the brotherhood or tearing it down. Another thought on the voluntary thing. You know, membership is voluntary. None of you are forced to be here. You could have chosen to go anywhere else, but you chose to be a member here. You chose to be a member of the Leola Brotherhood, if I may call it that, and I believe that's what it is. So why choose to be part of a brotherhood and then by your own actions help to tear it down, help to tear it apart? What you're doing or not doing reveals where your heart is. It's that simple. So check your heart. Back to the story of Nehemiah, over in chapter 2. We have him at the beginning of chapter 2. We have him speaking to Artaxerxes, sharing his burden with the king, requesting letters, verse 7, to go into Judah and to take a look at this problem and see what could be done about it. That was granted at the end of verse 8. Verse 9, then I came to the governors beyond the river, and I gave them the king's letters. Now the kings had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. So we have Nehemiah riding into Judah with basically an armed escort. He had a group of armed men anyhow with him. They were army people. He had letters from the king from verse 7 that basically gave him governorship of the area of Judea. Verse 7, notes where that brings it out. So he comes riding into Judea. Verse 10, enter Sanballat and Tobiah. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. You know, there's an enemy to the brotherhood. There are enemies, but one enemy especially, and that is the Prince of Darkness himself, that is interested and is grieved when those are out there seeking to build up the church, and he's interested in rather tearing it down. So our work in the brotherhood is a struggle against the Prince of Darkness himself. So let's keep that clear. Well, what does Nehemiah do? Verse 11, so I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. And he goes out by and he quietly observes. In the next 11, verse 16, the rulers knew not whither I went or what I did. Verse 16, neither had I as yet told it to the Jews, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work. He was silently observing and watching and trying to get an understanding of what the needs were. After his nighttime ride, verse 13, I went out by night by the gate of the valley. And he rides all around most of the way around the city. Verse 17, then said I unto them, ye see the distress we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burnt with fire. Come, let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. He reveals what his intentions are, and he lets them know what his vision and what he sees. You know, the brotherhood needs people that are alert to the needs and the dangers that are at hand. Is there dangers around us? Are there needs around us? Are you standing on or trying to build on top of a crumbling foundation? How would you know if you don't search it out? How would you know if you don't consider it? How would you know if you don't think seriously about what you're doing and where you are? May we be more like the Jews of Berea who searched the scriptures daily to see whether these things were so. Let's be alert. Let's be aware. Do you know what the intentionalist movement is? I'd like to raise a hand on this question. If you know what the intentionalist movement is, raise your hand. This is something that is affecting us and affecting The Mennonite Church as a whole and affecting the Pilgrim Conference right now. You should be aware of what this is. You should know what it is. What is it? What do they promote? Is it scripturally sound? I realize in the way I asked this question, I put it in a negative context, and I don't necessarily mean it that way. I don't plan to talk any more about it this morning. If you'd like to talk with me afterwards, you may. I'm willing to talk about it. But I want you to think and consider and be alert and be awake yourself. I can't do that for you. Can we look out beyond this life, the day-to-day duties of life, and see the dangers that are threatening us or the areas where we're weak and need some strengthening? Or is that just for us preachers to do? Do you have a part? Do you have responsibility in that? Or are you just too busy? Somebody else can do it. Whose job is it anyway? This is a story about four people named Everybody, Somebody, Anybody, and Nobody. There was an important job to be done, and everybody was sure that somebody would do it. Anybody could have done it, but nobody did it. Somebody got angry about that because it was everybody's job. Everybody thought anybody could do it, but nobody realized that everybody wouldn't do it. It ended up that everybody blamed somebody when nobody did what anybody could have. Maybe you've heard that before. But it does teach a powerful lesson that if we wait and expect everybody else to do it, it won't happen. Take personal responsibility for it. What would have happened on April 18, 1775, if a certain horseback rider had taken that same lackadaisical attitude? All right, school students, who was that? See if you're awake. Who was that horseback rider of April 18, 1775? Paul Revere. How would the story of American history read if that same horseback rider had decided, you know what, somebody else can do it. I'm busy. I'm tired. Nighttime is for sleeping. I'll let somebody else handle it. And he didn't. He got up in the middle of the night, I'm not sure if he ever went to bed, and went on a historic horseback ride through the New England states, warning the Americans that the Redcoats were coming. Interesting little story if you weren't aware of it. So if the walls and foundations begin to crumble and fall, will we notice? Will we take notice? Will we see? Because our brotherhood will fall right down along with it, if it does. All right, chapter 2. Back to verse 17. Nehemiah tells them, come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more reproach. Verse 18. Then I told them, this is his fellow Hebrews, then I told them of the hand of my God which was good upon me, and also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. Verse 1 of chapter 3. Then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brethren, the priests, and they built the sheep gate. They sanctified it. They set up the doors of it, even unto the tower of Mia. They sanctified it unto the tower of Hananiel. And next unto him builded the men of Jericho, and next to them builded Zachar, the son of Imri. But the fish gate did the sons of Hesenah build, who also laid the beams thereof, and set up the doors thereof, the locks thereof, and the bars thereof. And next unto them repaired Meremoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Kaz. And next unto them repaired Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, the son of Meshezabeel. And the next unto them repaired Zadok, the son of Baana. And next unto them the Teokites repaired, but their nobles put not their necks to the work of the Lord. Moreover, the old gate repaired Jehoiada, the son of Paseah, and Meshulam, the son of Besadiah. They laid the beams thereof and set up the doors thereof and the locks thereof and the bars thereof. And so on throughout the whole chapter, the remainder, remainder of the chapter, up to verse 32, the building and construction is underway. Chapter 4, verse 6, when it was complete. So we built the wall. And all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. The brotherhood to survive needs people that are willing and ready to work. Wednesday night, some of you got some new responsibilities. Are you going to put your heart into it? Are you going to put your mind into it? Are you going to put your all into it? Are you willing to work? Probably it wasn't what you would have chosen. Good chance. It's okay. Are you willing to set yourself aside and get to work? Do you have a mind to work? Nehemiah didn't try to do this all by himself. It would have failed. The only way he could do it was to get everyone involved and everyone to take up the burden and build these walls. I mentioned before, no one can force you to do that. That's something you voluntarily take up yourself. Those that don't get involved are a hindrance. Verse 5, the nobles put not their necks to the work of the Lord. Why is that recorded here? In the midst of all this good, this construction, this building, this people working together, there's this little sour note. But their nobles put not their necks to the work of the Lord. While it doesn't explicitly say so, I'm sure that was a discouragement to the people. It was a hindrance to the work. How much more could have got done if they would have put their necks to the work yet on top of it? Fascinating to note that of all the people in here that are mentioned, there's only one group of people that were working on two different projects. And that was these very Tekoites. Verse 5. If you go over to verse 27, after them the Tekoites repaired another piece over against the great tower that lieth out even unto the wall of Ophel. Were they trying to pick up the slack that their nobles refused to do? I don't know. But they were doing twice as much work as the rest. They saw a burden, or they had a burden, they saw a need. And they were going to do what they could to fix it. Verse 12. And next unto him repaired Shalom, the son of Halohesh, the ruler of the half-part of Jerusalem, he and his daughters. So ladies, sisters, I don't want you to feel left out. This involves you as well. We need you. The brotherhood needs you as well. This is not one side of the house versus the other. There's work for all to do. Are the walls broken down in our brotherhood here this morning? Are some gates smoldering about to burst into flames? Then let us rise up and build. Can we get off the fence and lay aside the things of this life? Lay aside our besetting sins and do something. And get to work. And I don't want to imply that I don't think we are. But yet this is a work that we need to keep alive and keep important and keep a vision for. We live in an individualistic society. That was already mentioned this morning. The I society. It's all about what makes me feel good. Good feelings are more important than anything, really. If it doesn't make me feel good, I want no parts of it. I shouldn't have to give up anything I want. Is that right? That philosophy is all around us, and it's not only rubbing off on us, it's coming, it's walking right in the front door. We all deal with this, including myself. Today we have the means to get it. Years ago they didn't always do that. Even if I can't afford it, I can just put it on a credit card and get it. Makes me feel good. I have a right to happiness. How does this build a brotherhood? It doesn't. It tears it down. To make this brotherhood function the best it can, I have to deny myself. Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to lay down your own preferences, your own wishes, things that maybe seem right and good? I'm thinking of the Sunday school lesson here. Things that seem okay. Are you willing to set that aside and lay it down? Or are you more important than the brotherhood? Because that's really what we're saying. If we insist on doing things our way, if our brotherhood has decided this and we insist on doing things my way, I'm saying I'm more important than the rest of you. There is a blessing in laying down myself for the brotherhood. It's okay to say no to self. Oh, wait, it's actually mandatory. What did Leon read for devotions? If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. Whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. It's not optional. Self-denial is not optional, it's mandatory. So as we go about our life here in the coming week, the coming days, as you make decisions, what guides those decisions? Upon what basis do you decide to do what you're doing? Sisters, when it's time to cut out your new dress, are you going to push the line as far as you think you can? How many extras can you add in until you've totally changed the look? Does your covering have to follow the current fad and look like it's falling off the back of your head? Brethren, you go to buy a vehicle. Is it to serve your needs? Or is it to boost your ego? Is it so hard to keep top buttons shut and sleeves down for Sunday morning worship? I don't know. We've never said that sleeves need to stay down. It's just a personal preference of mine. And here's one that touches all of us, including me. And that is WhatsApp. How much time I waste on that app. It's something I've been working at. You can feel free to ask me how I'm doing. But there is so much time that's wasted there that could be spent on much, much better things. Finally, I want to say this. This, in some ways, perhaps could be considered a negative message. I don't think it is. It could be considered that. I do want to, at a later time, preach a message on maybe perhaps more the positive side. But I felt like I should start with this one. It's been something that's been on my mind for a long time. Because I appreciate what we have here. And I want to uphold it, and I want to continue. I want to see it continue. I want it to be around for my children and grandchildren. And it's going to take all of us to make it work and to make it last. United we stand, divided we fall. Couldn't find out who was the source of that statement, but it's saying it's been around for many years. United we stand, divided we fall. We're strongest when we stand together when we work together, when we build each other up, when we focus on the needs of the brotherhood instead of myself. Can we get the focus off of me and onto the good of the group? Can you be counted on? Can the brotherhood count on you? Are you available? Are you ready to help? Or are you sitting on the fence trying to serve two masters? But Jesus said you can't do that. You're either serving one or the other. But so we so easily fall into that trap of trying to do that. Of trying to live for me and still try to go to church on Sunday morning and make it look good. I did that for many years myself, I confess it. But let's set that aside and build as these people in Nehemiah's day did. Do you appreciate the brotherhood? If your answer is yes, what are you doing about it? Or are you expecting everybody else? Or are you waiting on everybody to do what anybody could do, to do what you could do? Finally, back to the question we started off with. Is brotherhood a burden? Yes, I believe it is. But I don't think a burden has to be a negative thing. It's what we often the way we think of a burden as a negative thing, as something we want to get rid of, something we don't want. But I believe it is a burden, but it's a burden that comes with blessings, and that's a paradox, which maybe is hard to see sometimes, but it is a burden that comes with many, many blessings. How big that burden is depends on how committed you are to bearing that burden. We choose the size of the burden by our attitude and willingness to cooperate in the work of the brotherhood. But yet the burden will still be there. Can we ever lay that burden down? I asked also at the beginning, can we ever lay that burden down? No, I don't think we can. Not if we want to stay apart. Even if you go outside these doors and worship elsewhere, if you're interested in being part of the Church of Christ, there will be a burden for that place. There will need to be a burden for that wherever you find yourself. So that burden in this life we never lay down. Are you willing to bear the burden of brotherhood this morning? Let's kneel for prayer.